Bill Picardi here with the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on a Tuesday, August 27. Today we hear about living with the heat, dropping statewide test scores, another GOP candidate for a U.S. Senate, and a wolf attack in northern Minnesota. First, it was cool most of the summer. We wondered if we would ever get some regular 80-degree weather. Well, we have bypassed the 80s altogether, with record-breaking highs in the 90s. As Matt Sepik reports, the heat has made for some discomfort at the fair and in class.
The crowd trudging down Dan Patch Avenue in the mid-afternoon sun, wearing sweat-soaked ball caps, melting snow cones in hand, wasn't as big as on opening day, but it was still respectable. Some stepped off the steaming asphalt and beelined for the closest shade tree. A weary few turned into the medical aid building on the west end of the fairgrounds. You might think with weather like this, the doctors and nurses here would be overwhelmed with people passing out from heat stroke, but most people in the building were there to enjoy a few minutes in the air conditioning with a cool glass of water. Matt Simpson, deputy chief at the St. Paul Fire Department, says there's been no uptick in heat-related illnesses at the state fair. He says on Sunday, medical staff saw 80 people, mostly for minor problems, and only four of those people needed to go to the hospital. Unlike the temperature, Simpson says the number of sick cases is average.
We actually brought one additional ambulance in just to prepare for that additional heat potential, but we haven't seen that influx in our transports yet, which has been really good for us.
Day five of the fair was also day one of the school year across the river in Minneapolis. Most of the district's buildings are air-conditioned, but a dozen and a half are not. It's 3 o'clock at Patrick Henry High School in North Minneapolis, and 18-year-old senior Meng Tao is glad to be out of the stuffy school and outside in the, you can't exactly call it, fresh air. An old brick building holds in the heat like a pizza oven on a sweltering day, and Tao says one classroom on the top floor of the building felt especially miserable, even in the morning.
We got free water from the district, so that was a plus. And other than that, the teachers popped open the windows.
Did they have fans going?
Yes, a lot.
Tao, captain of his tennis team, said practice was canceled because of the heat. While the kids at Patrick Henry said, give me AC or give me the day off, teacher Matthew Muirs says everyone in the building handled the heat just fine.
If it did anything, it made them kind of more complacent because it was too hot to do anything else than just to kind of sit there and listen to your teacher. So it was actually a really nice first day of school.
While the teachers and students at Patrick Henry High didn't have the luxury of air conditioning, it seems everyone else in the Twin Cities Metro who did had it cranked up to 11. That caused some trouble for the folks at Xcel Energy, who've been playing a bit of whack-a-mole fixing rolling blackouts. Part of South Minneapolis went dark for a few hours Sunday night, and Xcel's website reported several thousand outages at various times during the day yesterday. Xcel spokeswoman Mary Sandock says the supply of electricity isn't the problem, but she says with all the demand from air conditioners, sometimes bottlenecks crop up in the equipment that sends the juice that last mile to your home.
Mechanical equipment can sometimes break down when it's in an overload situation, and that's what will happen in excessive heat situations on our electricity system.
Sandock says you can help reduce demand by turning up the temperature on your thermostat and running appliances at night. Excessive heat warnings remain in effect for the southern third of Minnesota, including the Twin Cities, through tonight. Highs in the lower 90s are expected by tomorrow, which, relatively speaking, may feel like a bit of relief. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The hot, dry air for much of the state is hurting crops. Here's Mark Stile.
The condition of the state's corn and soybean crops slipped over the past week. 54% of the soybeans are rated good or excellent, down 5 percentage points in the last week. Corn slipped 4 notches. Philip Glogoza with the Minnesota Extension Service says crops on sandy soils are the worst hit. He says in northwest Minnesota, some fields have spots in them where the crop is dead.
Brown. Just completely fried.
Topsoil moisture is short in two-thirds of the state. Grain prices are rising rapidly because the hot weather is hurting crops all across the U.S. Soybean prices have risen more than 17% this month. Mark Stile, Minnesota Public Radio News, Worthington.
Hot, dry weather can spark wildfires. In the West, we've been hearing about the Yosemite fire all week. Here, the Superior National Forest is proposing a plan officials say could prevent a similar fire in northern Minnesota in the future. Dan Crocker has more.
The agency wants to conduct a 1,500-acre prescribed burn along the north arm of Burnside Lake near Ely. Officials say the controlled fire will thin out balsam fir in the understory, reducing the risk of a future crown fire. Some nearby homeowners fear officials could lose control of the planned burn. Fire Management Officer Timo Rova says 99% of prescribed fire since the 1970s have been successful.
We're not going to bite off more than we can chew. We're going to bring the appropriate resources in before we take it on. Otherwise, you're just sitting on a powder keg, hoping the spark never happens.
The public has until the end of September to appeal the plan. The Forest Service hopes to begin burning next year. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Ely.
The chair of the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority, Michelle Kelm-Helgen, says there is no chance the construction of a new Viking stadium will fall apart. That following last week's halt in negotiations between the authority and the team on lease agreements. Vikings officials say those talks must wait until the completion of the authority's recently launched investigation into team ownership finances. But even if that review finds trouble, Kelm-Helgen says the stadium would move forward.
The NFL has definitely assured us that they want to move forward with this project, that they fully support this project. They want to keep an NFL team in this area. So I do believe that if something were to happen, I think that there's ways that the NFL would move forward.
The review is expected to be completed by September 15th. Kelm-Helgen has said any delays beyond that date could put the schedule for stadium construction in jeopardy. Senator Al Franken is raising concerns about the effect of sequestration on Minnesota's seniors. Here's our Julie Seipel.
Federal across-the-board budget cuts known as a sequester reduced funds from the Older Americans Act by about $1.4 million in Minnesota. That money is used for senior services like home-delivered meals and transportation. At a meeting in St. Paul with seniors and senior advocates, Franken said providing those services can actually save money.
It enables seniors to stay in their homes where they want to be, where they prefer to be, and not have to go into a senior living facility, go into a nursing home, which just costs so much more money.
So far, agencies that distribute the funds in Minnesota have been able to make up for the cuts by using reserves, but those reserves will be gone by year's end. Julie Seipel, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A man who wants to unseat Al Franken talked with Morning Edition this morning. Kathy Werzer has been talking with Republicans vying for the Senate in 2014. We've heard from candidates Jim Abler and Mike McFadden. Today it was St. Louis County Board of Commissioners Chair Chris Dahlberg's turn.
Well, to be clear now, you haven't formally announced your campaign, but you've been telling folks about your plans in the last week or so. When will you file the paperwork?
Correct. I'll file the paperwork. It looks like it'll be the end of September. And the reasoning on the timing, Kathy, is that I'm retiring after 25 years in the United States Army Reserve on October 1st. So I wanted to put it close to that so that I wasn't really having a major overlap.
Sounds like, though, a high-profile backer of yours, Stanley Hubbard, chairman of Hubbard Broadcasting, tipped folks off to your plans. Did he recruit you to run?
Well, yes. We talked about that. I love public policy. I love governance. Sometimes my friends think I'm kind of a geek because of it, but I just feel like I have a calling. And so we had struck up a conversation right about the time of my last reelection campaign, and he just felt that I was the type of Republican that can reach out across Minnesota and probably reach out to a mainstream Minnesotans.
Now, I was talking to my friends in Duluth about you, and they say you're more of a moderate Republican. Would that be true?
Well, what I like to think is I'm a reasonable, common-sense person. I think that if you look at my voting record as far as on the fiscal side, you will say, I can say I'm an unabashed fiscal conservative. I really watch out for the taxpayers. But I probably consider myself somewhat of a populist. I always like to describe my district, Kathy, as a blue-collar, hardworking individuals who are compassionate about the truly needy, but are not too tolerant about foolish spending.
Is there something missing in this current GOP field for Senate? There's three other candidates in the pool already that you think you bring to the table?
I feel I'm uniquely qualified to address really what I see as the two overarching major problems facing our nation right now. And those two problems are, it's the $17 trillion fiscal debt, which we're really going to saddle that debt up to people such as my daughter, who's 9 years old. And then the second thing is national security. And I think, given the fact that I'm boots on the ground, a county commissioner, I see what happens with some of the programs that come down and the inefficiencies from Washington, D.C. And also, I think I bring a certain credibility that few people bring with 25 years of military experience, including a tour in Iraq.
You know, let me ask you about that, because of your experience with the Army Reserves and being in the military. Let's take something in the news about the possible use of chemical weapons in Syria.
Sure.
Do you worry that the U.S. could get embroiled in another conflict, and might that be Syria?
It's a great question, because I think there's a lot of situations we've talked about in history where this is similar. You know, we've talked about President Clinton, I think, in Bosnia, and the situation is that, you know, what I see, Kathy, is America is the greatest nation in the world. And I will even go so far to say that I think God's blessed us. And in that same sense, I think that we have a moral obligation and leadership when there's massive genocide, and that we can get to proving it. I think that we have the moral authority that we have to go in and protect in that case. And I shouldn't say go in immediately. I think you have to go through channels, and such as President Clinton worked in the past. And I know my fellow conservatives will cringe when I use this word, but we have to first go to the United Nations. And we know that just doesn't work, because you've got partners like Russia in there that are going to just block it. So the next step, as has been done, is you look to NATO. But I would be very cautious. But when I was training before I went over to Iraq, I was down at Fort Polk prepping. And I saw, you know, some of the absolute terrible crimes of man against man as far as what they did to the Kurds in Iraq at the time and the gassing of them. And so what you have in Chris Dahlberg, you know, if the citizens of Minnesota elect me, is you have an individual that's going to be thoughtful in approach. He's going to be strong on defense for our nation, protecting our citizenry here and abroad, but at the same time, able to raise questions.
Let's talk about health care for just a moment. Remember, Republicans in the House and Senate in Washington want to repeal the nation's new health care law. Would you support doing that?
If you have a flawed law, like I would say the health care, the Affordable Care Act, think about the arrogance of elected officials who say, hey, once we've decided on something and we passed it, we don't care about other elected officials coming along. It's going to stay there no matter what. Don't confuse us with the facts. I think that's wrong. We're a leader in some of these issues, such as education and Minnesota. So why would we ever get into the point of saying we're going to give control to the federal government and let's have a race to the bottom with other states? I mean, if we're at the top, why shouldn't we do what we've been doing?
But Minnesota still, as you know, being a county commissioner, Minnesota still has substantial numbers of people without health insurance. So how do you deal with that?
Well, they do, Kathy, and I think it's really a complicated issue. I think one of the things that we found is Governor Pawlenty was trying to address the escalating costs of health care. Now, I'm not here today to defend Governor Pawlenty's position, but one of the things he sure did is he got a firestorm going among Democrats and Republicans discussing it. I would rather put my faith in the state legislature than the federal government to solve this. Let the 50 states start to come up with their ideas, and rather than having just a one team out there, we're going to have 50 teams, and we're going to find what is going to be the best solution addressing this.
Will you abide by the Republican Party endorsement?
I'm going to go for the Republican Party endorsement. One of the things is I'm 51 years old. I've been involved in Republican politics since probably 16. I think I was one of the youngest delegates ever at 18, and I've been to some of these conventions till 2, 3 in the morning. And so I am really going to urge all of my fellow Republican candidates, and I'm going to use a little bit of pressure when I get to some of these debates to say, hey, come on now, are you going to abide by this? Let's all get in this, because I sure don't want to go into this with one man, with one hand tied behind my back into this race, and everybody saying, hey, I really respect the endorsement process. Please give me endorsement. But by the way, I'm going to go right on to the primary.
That's Chris Dahlberg with Kathy Werzer. It's the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. Minnesota education officials are sounding a note of caution about the new results of the statewide student assessment tests. The data show a big decline in reading scores over the last year. Here's our education reporter, Tim Post.
At first glance, the results of the latest Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment Tests, or MCAs, might take teachers and parents' breath away. The percentage of students considered proficient in reading looks like it fell by double digits. Last year, 76% of Minnesota students were considered proficient in reading. This year, it's just under 58%. The reason? Well, you can blame a harder test.
Certainly our kids didn't, like, all of a sudden take a 20-30% dip in 1 year in what they know and can do.
Minnesota Education Commissioner Brenda Caselius says this is the first year Minnesota 3rd through 8th graders took standardized reading tests based on the Common Core, a new national set of stringent standards intended to better prepare students for college or a career. She says it's not appropriate to compare this year's reading scores to last year's.
These are two completely different tests. Kids are asked to do completely different types of tasks on this test, but it's a much more challenging and difficult test.
This year's reading test included more complex language in the passages students were required to read, and it included more questions, and harder questions as well. The scores on the new test didn't come as a surprise to schools. State education officials issued warnings earlier this summer, so the scores wouldn't be perceived as a decline. Eric Moore, Director of Research, Evaluation, and Assessment for Minneapolis Public Schools, is taking the new scores in stride. Under the new standards, 43% of Minneapolis students are considered proficient in reading, 15 points below last year.
And it just gives us a new bar to work towards. So again, it's just a baseline for us to move forward on.
Moore says next year's scores in reading will be a key indicator on how students are doing under the new reading standards. This reset of sorts for student reading scores won't affect how schools rank in the state through the multiple measurements rating, which come out this fall. That system is based on a slightly different measurement involving grade-to-grade academic growth. Moore is happy this year with Minneapolis students' overall math scores. They're up 3 percentage points over last year. Statewide, however, math proficiency in 3rd through 8th grade declined by a few percentage points over the last year, although scores are still higher than they were 2 years ago. That quirk may have popped up because in 2012, many districts in the state gave students 3 MCA math tests and then chose the best one. State officials think that artificially inflated math scores. The St. Paul district gave students only 1 math test in 2012, and officials say that's given them solid data this year. It shows students improving in math proficiency by 3 percentage points over last year. Matt Mose, the district's chief academic officer, says just 2 years ago, new, tougher state math standards went into place, and St. Paul has been pushing students toward those benchmarks.
A lot of it has been just intentional focus in the area. So we have particularly been providing more support to schools in math.
The MCAs also measure how well students are doing in science by testing them in 5th and 8th grade and once in high school. Overall, students in 5th and 8th grade improved their proficiency rates by a few percentage points. High school scores went up 1%. State officials say there have been gains in test scores among students of color in recent years, but they're not the increases they want to see. A wide gap of 20 to 30 percentage points still separates white students and students of color in math, science, and reading.
Tim Post for us there. A teenager apparently was attacked over the weekend by a gray wolf in northern Minnesota. The attack occurred at a campground on the shores of Lake Winnebogoshish. We go back to Kathy Werzer for a chat with Tom Provost. He is the regional manager of the DNR's Enforcement Division.
Any reason to think this was a provoked attack?
No, just the opposite. It was, as you had stated, it was an individual that was outside his tent laying on the ground, doing nothing but lying still and being quiet, and the first thing he realized, he had a wolf biting him in the back of the head.
I understand wolves are pretty shy. They don't really like to be around humans. What's your best guess right now about why the wolf behaved this way?
Well, if we did catch and kill the offending animal, and that information is not available to us yet until we're done with the necropsy and the DNA workup on it, but the wolf that was caught and killed yesterday morning definitely had a physical abnormality in its jaw structure, and it was missing one of its primary canine teeth and had a misalignment to the two jaws. And there is a thought that if it was the offending animal, that it was struggling to feed itself in the normal wolf manner. It would have really struggled with capturing and killing prey.
So if in the wolf's mind, prey is just lying there on the ground, it would have been an easy target.
Yeah, and chances are this wolf was an opportunistic feeder. The initial survey of the carcass indicated it had a st- stomach contents that included fish and fish bones, which likely would have been a fish that was dead and washed up on shore. And this gentleman was laying right next to the shoreline. And, we're thinking right now that if this was the offending animal, he was reacting in an opportunistic manner.
Last week on the program, we heard that DNR officials are warning folks in northeastern Minnesota to stop feeding a group of wolf pups that are becoming pretty friendly with humans. Any reason to believe that that was happening in this area, too?
Well, we can't say that people were feeding this animal, but since it was a campground setting, there was a dumpster or a garbage receptacle nearby, there is a chance that this wolf is habituated towards the campground and was able to come in and steal a free meal here and there during the night, versus people outright feeding it, trying to keep it in the area. But, you know, it likely associated the campground with the opportunity to grab a free meal.
Campers are told to keep their food locked away to avoid bear. Anything different that folks should do to make their campsites less appealing to wolves?
No, same exact thing. And, you know, we know that the wolf is going to avoid a campground much more than bears are. And again, this was a wolf running around with a physical abnormality, and it had to adapt to its surroundings. So,
the new wolf hunt is controversial, you know that, and some folks may look at this incident and say, well, it justifies hunting wolves, and others would say, well, the hunt disrupts packs and could create more lone wolves. Any connection to be made between the attack and recent changes to the way that the DNR manages wolves?
No, we have one wolf season under our belts at this point, and there's really no correlation to disrupting any type of pack dynamic and having a lone male wolf running around with this kind of physical problems that it had. There's an outside chance that this wolf might not have been very welcome in a wolf pack because he was unable to contribute to the group.
Mm-hmm. Any time frame to get the autopsy results and results of any rabies?
Well, I was informed yesterday evening that the rabies tests should be done today or tomorrow, Tuesday or Wednesday, and we should have full necropsy results at the end of the week.
All right. Tom, anything else you want to add for listeners?
No, it's important that the listeners realize that this is a very, very rare occurrence.
Tom Provost, thanks for the conversation this morning.
Thank you.
The DNR's Tom Provost and Kathy Werzer. Now, to close out the podcast, another animal with a pretty strong bite. Producer Jim Bickle spoke with Monty Creason of Monty's Traveling Reptile Show. For more than 30 years, Monty has shown fair visitors at the state fair his snakes, turtles, iguanas, and one 300-pound alligator named Albert.
First of all, you know, the alligators and the crocodilians, they are the only ones that display parenthood, where we choose a mate. Female lays eggs, so both the male and the female start making a huge compost pile above the flood line in the swamp. She deposits the eggs, and then they both guard them. Sometimes it's just her, and there's nothing meaner than a wet mama alligator guarding her eggs. She will kick some booty. So then, when the eggs are ready to hatch in 100 days, they will chirp if they're having trouble getting out. And the parents who, you know, have 2,100 pounds per square inch biting capacity, strongest bite on the planet, basically, they pop these eggs open and put the babies in their mouth and spits the shells out. And six or eight at a time, they'll take them to a desirable area of the swamp. But now check this. Once they got them all out of the nest, they live with them for a year and a half. And these pelicans and all these birds that would like to go over there and gobble. I mean, it happens. But there's nothing worse than a grumpy old man protecting his babies. They display tremendous intelligence.
Was it dangerous at all? I mean, why not?
These are all very special. They have been imprinted, trained, whatever you want to call it, that people are a positive thing in their life. The one in the wild looks as a human being as a bad boy. So when you give them the three things that they basically fight for, food, security, and temperature, then you become a positive denominator in their life. And people, whether they're wiggly kids in schools or adults, are not a threat to these.
What would surprise people about an animal like this?
Well, when he was young, growing up in my trailer that I traveled all over North America with, we get to California, and from Thanksgiving to May, he would not eat. He would fast. Like, see, most of the alligators live in a temperate zone in North America, and the only ones that are tropical are from Miami South. So unlike the crocodile, who enjoys the equator belt, where he's always got the ability to eat and digest, these guys are a little pickier. They do a lot of scavenging and carry on. Now, a croc is a different guy. He's laying there waiting. And the alligator would rather use his senses to go, oh boy, a four-day-old floating fish. Mercy. Sushi. A sushi bar. You know.
Traveling Monte Creason there with Jim Bickle on the NPR News Update. Thanks for coming along. Tomorrow, Wednesday, more Minnesota news on your schedule.